Welcome to Awakened Path Radio, helping to spread love and light for the highest and greatest good. I'm your host, Reverend Candace Nadine Green, spiritualist minister and healing minister. For more information, including show updates, courses, workshops, events, resources, and more, visit my website at www.awakenedpathonline.com. Again, that's www.awakenedpathonline.com. Now on to today's show. Today I have with me Reverend Janet Decker, who is a certified clinical hypnotherapist, or certified anesthesia therapist, and a qualified forensic hypnosis. She is a hypnotherapy instructor and author. She holds a doctorate in metaphysical studies from the International Metaphysical University. She is also a co-creator of the Angel Guidance Board, which is no longer in production, but it may be viewed on the Museum of Talking Boards website at www.museumoftalkingboards.com/GAL7.html. Janet is currently on the faculty of the Online International Metaphysical University, where she teaches the foundations of psychic development and understanding our paranormal universe. And there's a whole bunch of other things that she does that I haven't even begun to talk about, but we'll talk about during this interview. Welcome to our show, Janet. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Candace. It's good to be here.
Excellent. So, now tell us about your spiritual journey in regards to being involved with the International Metaphysical University.
Well, my spiritual journey is a long one, which started about 34, 35 years ago. And as so many people who are catapulted onto a spiritual path, it happened at a very low time in my life. I was going through some really traumatic stuff and looking for some answers, not knowing anything about metaphysics at the time. And a friend of mine, I lived in Maryland then, a friend of mine suggested going down to Virginia to the Arlington Metaphysical Chapel and getting a reading. And what's funny about that is I didn't even know what a reading was. I said, what's a reading? we went down and I was totally amazed, completely amazed at what the pastor of this church could tell me. He had an interesting way of doing readings. He would have you take a 3x5 card, write 5 questions on it, fold it up, and you held it in the palm of your hand. And he never looked at the questions, but he would answer every one of them.
Wow.
I've never seen anything since then to equal that. So when that happened, I said, I have to know more. And that started me on my journey. I, being an Aquarian, I'm very interested in anything like that. Mm. And so I started, and I began the very long process of learning so much that I knew nothing about. And it landed me with where I am today as a hypnotherapist, a teacher, a psychic development teacher, instructor, and all things metaphysical, basically, meditation instructor, spiritual healer, all these things started from that first beginning, 34, 35 years ago. And in 2009, Deborah Lindsay, who is the president of the International Metaphysical University, called me up. She's a good friend of mine. And she said, Janet, I'm launching a new project, and I wonder if you would come on board and be part of our faculty. And so she then decided, you know, told me about the university and what they decided to do. So I went to West Virginia. I live in Maine. And I went to West Virginia for a couple of weeks, and sat on the faculty. I actually came in at the tail end of the work, because they had done a lot of it already. And so I came in, and I spent a couple of weeks in West Virginia with her and the staff and faculty of IMU. And IMU was launched in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I've been on that faculty ever since. I teach several, as you said in the opening narrative, I teach a couple of different classes. I teach an ordination class, which is actually hosted by IMU, but you won't find it on their website. It's the spiritual, independent spiritualist minister ordination program. It's hosted by our church. So anyway, I teach that. I teach a psychic development course, and I am the proctor for Understanding Your Paranormal Universe. Mm-hmm. And the instructor is Rupert Matthews. He's the person who put that course together.
A very good course too, I might add.
Yes. I would say you should know.
Yeah. I enjoyed that class greatly.
Yeah. And you also know about the ordination course.
I do. That's right. Yeah. Very good. Very good course.
Yes. So that's how I ended up at the International Metaphysical International University. I'll call it IMU for short.
Yes.
And we thought that was kind of fun when we came up with IMU, because
yes.
I am you.
Yes.
Is one of the metaphysical teachings. And so it was kind of neat that it turned out that way with the title of the school.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep. It's been a journey, but it's one that has been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it continues. As you know, Candace, there's just far more to learn out there than I think any one lifetime could possibly encompass or learn, you know, in one lifetime. It's just one thing leads to another thing, to another thing, to another thing. And that's where the university is very, very good, because there's a lot of really good courses on the university website for people to begin to really learn something. Good teachers. Anyway, I find that it's never boring.
No.
Metaphysical journey is never boring. It's interesting to me that about 4 or 5 years ago, I was in a shamanic journeying course at in Camp Etna in Maine, and the instructor is someone I know, but I had never taken a course from her, although I've done many shamanic type courses. And one another pastor came in, and so Lori was asking, that's the teacher, she was asking everyone why they were there. And I said, well, you know, I'm always learning, always growing, experiencing. And she asked Shirley, another person who was in the course, why are you here? And she said, well, I'm just getting bored. I'm not learning anything new, so I thought I would try it out. And I thought to myself, well, actually, I said to her, I said, you're bored? I said, there's so many avenues and paths you can take. I'm really surprised that she said that, because to me, how can you be bored?
I know. There's so many things to learn. It just, one thing just leads to another, and another, and another, and another. And that's at least what I've found.
I agree.
That I can, and then there's so many books to read. There's so much.
Yeah,
we
can't do it all.
Oh, no.
You know, the best you can do is pick a topic, mm-hmm. and try it. And if it really, really floats your boat, then continue with that until you feel you've absorbed everything you can at this time from it, and then proceed to the next door that opens, because it will open another door.
Right.
And I know when I was first starting on my metaphysical journey, I think you can actually understand this as well, there was so much to learn that I just became a little overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I wanted to do this and this, yes, and this and this. Yeah. I wanted to do them all at the same time.
Right. Right.
I wanted to do it all. And it was like a sponge. And first thing you know, I was thinking, my brain hurts.
Yeah. And the courses are so interactive, and they present so many things. There's videos, there's readings, there's everything to just keep your mind, like keep filling you up. It's, you get so hungry for this knowledge, and you want to take another course and another and another and another. So it's a fabulous school.
It is. I think it is. I think we put together a real good program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back when 34, 35 years ago, we didn't have the internet.
No. Right.
So you really had to want to know this stuff, because you had to seek it out.
Well, why?
I traveled far and wide to classes. My. Yep. And the only thing you could get was a book. Right. Hopefully find a course or a teacher that would teach a course. And let me tell you, it wasn't always the greatest course or the greatest teacher. And I spent a lot of time and money traveling all kinds of places, largely down to Virginia, and into like Washington, D.C. and places like that, that were more, you know, more, you wouldn't think that there are more awakened people, but really there are in Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia. And wow, that's where a lot of the classes were.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, unlike today, you can get on the internet and find anything you want, mm-hmm, you know? So everybody today that's on the awakened path has it so much easier than I did.
Well, and then we hope that the future they have it even more easy, even yeah, more easy, so.
Absolutely, you know, it's time.
Right. Now, you're also the lead pastor for the Healing Light Spiritual Church, Healing Light Spiritualist Church, excuse me, located in Etna, Maine. Would you share to us, how did you get there? What sent you from Virginia, right?
From Maryland.
Maryland to Maine.
Well, that was, oh boy, do I have some interesting stories. At the time, I grew up in Maryland, and I spent 44 years in Maryland, in the town that I was born in.
Wow.
And I had a very active hypnotherapy practice, a very up-and-coming hypnotherapy practice, and I had had it for a few years, 6-7 years, and wanted to get out of town, wanted to get into the mountains of West Virginia. So I went into the mountains of West Virginia. I found a property, built a house, and loved it there. But there were some things happening in that particular mountaintop development that I did not like. And, you know, a lot of people, I'm a very earth loving person. And I think that every creature is as important as I am, mm-hmm, you know. And so we were having some issues in the development of people being very disrespectful of people's properties and the animals and the trees and so on and so forth. I was actually the homeowner's president, homeowners president. And we had gone to a vote to stop the use of ATVs running around people's properties, and people were setting up trails and then running all through properties and disturbing wildlife and our sanctuaries, basically. Mm-hmm. And in that meeting, we voted whether to allow or disallow ATVs. Well, they said we couldn't get a quorum. We only had about 50% of the people that didn't want them and 50% of the people who did. So I knew the practice would continue. And I said, well, I can't stay here anymore. Right. So one night I was asking angels, what am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? And where can I go that I can find some kind of peace and like-minded people? Because where I live, that area of Maryland, which is Western Maryland and the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, was basically a metaphysical wasteland. You had to travel if you wanted to go to church. I traveled an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, my.
Yes, to go to church and to go to classes and that sort of thing. Wow. So now we're in 1996 and I'm sorry, 2002. Mm-hmm. And I was told to call my friend who was in Gaithersburg, Maryland, get a reading. When I say told, spirit told me. Mm-hmm. Now, usually my friend Rose is a wonderful card reader. She now lives in Texas, but at the time she was in Gaithersburg, Maryland, Germantown, actually. And spirit said, call Rose, she'll tell you something. And I really resisted that because Rose knew me too well. And I don't like getting readings from people who know me real well, because I don't know if the information coming through is information that they're picking up or just what they know and want for me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So spirit was persistent. So I called Rose and she laid out the cards and she said, you're moving. And I said, I'm not moving. I don't want to move. I have to find, and at this time the meeting hadn't occurred in the homeowners development. All right. It hadn't occurred, but we were having these issues going on. She said, you're moving. I said, I don't want to move. I love it here. This is my sanctuary. I've built this place and I'm a friend with the animals here and that kind of thing. And she said, no, you're moving. And she said, somewhere with a lot of water and trees. and I couldn't begin. You know, I had never been to Maine. Oh. Never. My husband and I had talked about moving to Montana because we love Montana, but that doesn't have a lot of water and trees.
No.
She said, no, and you will move by May 1st.
Oh, wow.
Yes, of 2003. She actually named the date. Now, this is like February of 2002.
Oh, wow.
She said, by May 1st of 2003, you'll be gone. And I said, that can't happen this fast. I can't happen this fast. And she said, I'm telling you, that's what they're saying. So anyway, then fast forward to April, we had the development meeting the homeowners development meeting. And they had this vote that I knew would go nowhere. And so I put the house on the market, and lo and behold, well, actually, one night the girls were over. There's a group of us in Maryland, five of us, who would get together routinely a couple times a month. And we sat down with the angel board, because I wanted to know, and I know you're going to ask me about the angel board, but I wanted to know where I was moving to, because Rose couldn't tell me. So the angel board spelled out Maine, and I said, Maine, I don't want to go to Maine. I don't know anything about Maine.
It's cold.
It's cold in Maine. There's a lot of snow. And, you know, I'd never been further north than Cape Cod. So anyway, I said, well, they were insistent. So my husband and I started looking on the internet at properties in Maine. Lo and behold, we found one we really loved. We went up to Maine. We looked at a bunch of properties, found one we loved, put the house on the market. It sold in 2 weeks. Came back, loaded up the car, and on May 1st, I left West Virginia.
Wow.
So the angel board pointed me to Maine, and I've been here ever since. And now, after being here, I love it here. I can't imagine living anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's very, you know, this is a hotbed for spiritualism and metaphysics. Mm-hmm. And since I've been here, I've found so many like-minded people that it's crazy. I thought all those years I lived in Maryland and West Virginia, I couldn't find anybody.
Right.
And up here, they're all around me. So one of my friends that I met took me to Camp Etna, which is a spiritualist camp. Mm-hmm. And the Healing Light Church is in Etna. So I started attending. And a couple of years after attending, the head pastor came to me and she said, "I'm going to retire. I'm wondering if you would take over the church." Which I also resisted because I was 62 and I thought, I don't want to get started on something new now, not like that. Mm. But Spirit had other other ideas, and lo and behold, here I am. Now, I'm going to go back again 30 some years, and a reading I had with the same guy that did the card with the five questions. Mm-hmm. Spiritualist church services, as you know, have a message portion where the medium gives messages to people in the congregation. Right. And he came to me one day at a church service and he said, "You're one day going to have a church of your own." Mm-hmm. And I said, "No, I'm not," because I didn't want anything. It was so far out of my awareness at that point. I had only been on the metaphysical path a couple of years. And he said, "No, you will." He said, "We're going down the road about 25 or 30 years. He said, "But you will have your own church." So again, there was another thing that came to pass. That's how I ended up as head pastor of the Healing Light Spiritualist Church in Etna, Maine. What a journey.
It's a great journey. And you were being pointed in the right direction, in the direction, but you couldn't see it, of course.
No. But it's true. We can't all, we know we're always being guided. Right. We don't always know where.
Right.
Until the time comes.
That's true. Right. So now you're also involved in hypnotherapy.
And yes.
What led you to hypnotherapy?
Again, it was this need to know mental stuff. I was working at the time when I first got into hypnotherapy, I was working for an oral surgeon, very mainstream doctor. And he came to me, he knew I was into all this stuff. Yeah. I had been working for him quite a few years, probably 8 or 10 years by this time. And this was in 1990. Yeah. And he said, and he was interesting fellow because he was kind of open-minded. Well, somebody he knew had told him about a hypnotherapy practice that was coming up for sale in Hagerstown. And he said, "You're into all this kind of mind stuff." He said, "Would you be interested in going to school, learning it, taking it over?" And I said, "Yes." Absolutely, I would. And so as it turned out, I did go and get my certifications, and then he decided he didn't want to buy the practice, so I bought it.
Wow.
Yes, because I was fascinated with hypnotherapy and the ability that the mind has to fix problems, well, in the body.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, everything comes through the mind, when you think about it, I mean, it's your mind that makes your heart beat and your lungs breathe and your eyes blink and swallow and all those sort of things. So it makes sense that if you talk to the mind, you can possibly guide or direct healing things to happen, like overcoming addictions like smoking and all kinds of food addictions and things like that. And so that's how I actually got started with hypnotherapy. And honestly, hypnotherapy, I had been on probably the spiritual metaphysical path for about 8 years when this opportunity came with the hypnosis. And through doing, through doing hypnotherapy, unknowingly, I developed my mediumistic abilities and my psychic abilities.
Fantastic.
It's an interesting...
That is so interesting.
It is. It really is. Because the mind, what is mind? What is consciousness? It's everywhere.
That's right.
When you're a when you do hypnosis with people, you're forming this triangle basically between yourself, the client, and their higher self. And their higher self knows everything about them, knows what they need, and it will instruct the hypnotherapist if you can develop this. This is something that's very hard to teach students, is how to develop your connection to the client's higher mind. You can teach theory, you can teach everything about hypnotherapy, but getting students to understand that you literally have to get into an altered state of mind yourself to do this job well. And by developing or learning, and it just happened for me, I don't think about it as a learning thing. It just sort of happened doing client after client after client. I realized that I was tapping into something beyond just suggestions that they would no longer want to, you know, eat sweets, or they would no longer desire to smoke, or, you know, they would no longer be afraid of flying or things like that. It went far, far higher than that. So that actually helped me to develop my mediumship and my psychic abilities.
And you also have, and I, you know, have been looking around at stuff. You also have some hypnosis, CDs, MP3s out there as well.
I do. I have a line of, 10 different ones, and they're all available. Well, some of them aren't any longer, by CDs on Amazon. And the MP3s, this is another thing I've resisted. You know, of course, everybody's going to MP3s. And I have to change up my recordings. I have them for myself and my students. I can send a student an MP3, but if someone goes on Amazon and wants to buy an MP3 of psychic development, for instance, they can't. They can't do it. They can buy a CD, but they can't buy the MP3. So it's something that I need to do, is to switch over to MP3s through Amazon.
Yes.
And I just haven't done it yet.
Okay. You'll get there.
Yeah, it's not a priority for me.
And some people still do see, a lot of people still have CDs in their cars and things like that. So
they do. They do. Not that they'd want to listen to a hypnosis MP3 or
in their car. No, definitely not.
And they can always buy them and rip them and put them, you know, record them to their phones themselves.
That's right. They could do that.
Yes, that's how I feel about that.
And you also, I mean, you do so many things, but you're also the co-creator of the Angel Guidance Board. You talked a little bit about it. And so for our listeners who don't know what an Angel Guidance Board is, could you explain it to us, what it is?
Yes.
How you developed it?
Yep. It's an Oracle board, like a Ouija board, only it's with angels. Now, you know, I have this very creative streak in me, and a girlfriend and I were wondering, we wanted to do something together. We wanted to create something. And so I came up with the idea of like an angel board. And what we would do is make it very light, very bright. A lot of people are afraid of Oracle boards. And so we wanted... It's a good way to open psychic channels and mediumistic channels. But we wanted people not to be afraid. So we started talking, and just between us collaborating on what would be something we could do that would, you know, benefit people and they wouldn't be afraid to use it. So we came up with angels. Now, this is an interesting story in and of itself too. I was living in Hagerstown at the time, and I had my practice. Hypnotherapy practice. So it was 1995. We thought, well, we had an idea. Neither one of us are artists, but we had an idea for a design of the board. And we went to a local person and said, told him what we wanted. could you design the angels? And he said, well, what kind of angels do you want? And I said, well, I don't know. How many kinds of angels are there? You know, who thinks about that, right? An artist, that's who thinks about that. And he said, well, there's Renaissance angels and there's little Cupid type angels. I said, oh, for heaven's
sake. Right.
Right. I said, oh, for heaven's sake. I said, you come up with something. So we gave the project to him. And lo and behold, a week later, he calls and he said, I want you to come look at what I've done. And I couldn't believe he had this sketched out so fast. And they were perfect.
Oh.
They were perfect. And so we told him other designs we wanted on the board beside the angels. And I came up with a prayer that would be in the center of the board around the earth. We knew we wanted the earth in the center. One of the things that we have to remember as spiritualists and metaphysicians is it's okay to walk around with your head in the clouds, but you have to keep your feet firmly planted on the earth.
That is true.
Right? Mm-hmm. So here we had, the angels that are very, you know, celestial and cosmic, and we had the earth in the center. So I came up one night, I was saying to spirit and just speaking out. I was actually talking to my own muse, right? And I said, I need a poem. So they gave me 8 lines and I could only use 4 of them. So I picked the best 4 that I liked at the time. And that went around the earth so that people, when they would start to use the angel board, they could, if they couldn't come up with a prayer of their own, there's one printed right there. So within a couple of weeks, this whole board was finished and ready for production. And we sent it off to have it produced into flat 16 by 16 boards. We had a planchette, a round one. Mm-hmm. The Ouija board has sort of an arrowhead shaped planchette. And we started producing it.
Fantastic.
We had a really wonderful response to it. And what's interesting is many years later, I'm sitting at a potluck on the deck of the inn at Camp Etna. Yeah. And one woman who had come, well, there were a bunch of people there. They come for classes in the summer and they stay on the campgrounds. And one woman, we were just happened to be talking and someone mentioned the angel board. And she said, you're the designer? I said, I'm one of two. Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't believe it. She said, years ago, I bought one. I still have it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Isn't that something? So that's how I'm, you know, I used to board myself. My girlfriends and I would get together and we would have an evening of talking to angels through the angel board. So that particular year, 1995, first of all, the project came about so quickly and happened so quickly. We knew it was meant to be.
That's right. Yep.
Right. And so anyway, the I was going to say, oh, in 1995 was we are producing this. Mm-hmm. One of the places we sent the board to was a catalog called Red Rose, and it was a metaphysical catalog. They don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But the owner of the Red Rose catalog, the CEO called me and she said, are you aware that there's 2 other angel boards that have come before us this year? All 3 of them created by 2 women.
Oh.
I couldn't believe it. She said, we've never had any. And this year alone, we've had 3. And she said, one woman, was in Newport Beach, Virginia, and then we were in Maryland, and then there was two women in California. And she said, and I have to tell you, this is the most beautiful board I've ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah, she said, it's gorgeous. She said, but I thought it was interesting. So that just goes to show you, Candace, that when you put an idea out there, it's up for grabs.
That is true. That is true. That is true. Now, you've taught spiritual practices at both the high school and the college level. Are there any differences in regards to spiritual development and expectations between the two levels, the high school and the college?
Well, I believe my own personal feelings on that are that the college level students are more well-read. Uh-huh. They have a greater understanding at the college level what you're talking about.
Right.
Not to say that the high school level students don't know. They're just not, they haven't read as much.
Right.
And now, of course, the online stuff. You know, they're what they're interested in is very different from what college level, university level students are interested in. Mm-hmm. However, they're interested. Right. And here's the thing about spiritual practices. The younger someone begins a spiritual practice, mm-hmm. the more powerful it is. Mm-hmm. As youngsters or children, even, you know, whether it's grade level, grade school, or high school level, are very open to ideas. They haven't begun to close down. So are college level students. Mm-hmm. I actually got started very late onto a spiritual path. I was 32 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, in a way that's good, in a way it's bad. I'm not very, at 32, I'm not gullible, right?
Right.
I don't
right.
believe everything right. someone tells me.
Right.
So, yeah. So, but at it makes it harder at 32 and later in life to believe things. You're more skeptical. Mm. And I really need a lot of proof. A lot of proof. And so things come a little bit harder in that with the mediumship and the psychic stuff. Mm-hmm. Because my brain's always saying, is this real or is this not? I don't know if this is real. But the kids, they're like, oh yeah, why not?
Yeah,
yeah. Sure. Sure.
Right.
Like, they don't, you know, it's like they're more open.
That's,
and
yeah.
So what's interesting is this whole semantics, though, around words and what happens with words. Like, I have several friends that taught grade school, elementary, mm-hmm. and they are very into metaphysical and spiritual practices. One of the things one of my friends wanted to do was to start the children, elementary students, into meditation. Mm-hmm. Thought if they learned it early, right, it would help them through their whole life. And but she couldn't call it meditation.
Oh.
So she would have imagination circles.
Ah, nice.
How about that?
That's nice.
Yes.
Very nice. And I know in some of the, not to cut you off, I noticed my husband was telling me this as well, because he's still a public school teacher, and he went to visit another high school. I think it was a high school. And they had meditation. They did meditations. Mm-hmm. And then they called it meditation. I guess they're more accepting of it now. Also, yeah. At my son's school, he's only in first grade. And in their library class, they have a chime. So before they begin their lesson in the library, the librarian, it does the chime, and they're all to be quiet and close their eyes for 2 minutes. They don't call it meditation because it's a different town, and mm-hmm. this particular town is sort of not that open to mm-hmm. stuff like that. And, I mean, calling it what it is, so they don't call it what it is.
Yeah, so,
which is strange but true. And I mean, I think that's, and I've taught my children at home meditation. And I call it meditation, but that's because it's my house.
Of course. Yeah. A rose by any other name is still a rose, right?
Right.
But it is crazy the way towns and mm-hmm. states get locked into certain words that are mm-hmm. taboo. And it's crazy to mm-hmm. me. but it is what it is. So, you know, my hat was off to my friend who came up with the idea of an imagination circle.
That's so nice.
And here's the thing that a lot of people don't know, but children have very short, they might know this, but they don't relate it to the topic of meditation, is children have very short time, what's the word I want?
Attention spans?
Attention spans. That's it. Thank you. Very short. So, you know, a 2-minute quiet time is probably good, because too much longer than that and they're going to lose it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's actually proportionate a lot to the age of the student or the age of the child. You know, like if you've got a 6-year-old child, rule of thumb is they have a 6-minute attention span.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Yep. And as we get older, of course, that does increase. And that I loved working with children in my hypnotherapy practice because I had 100% success rate with children.
That's fantastic.
Children are so open and they believe everything.
And they don't have all the hangups that we, you know, we have and reservations that we have when we become adults. We become so rigid when we become adults. It's
precisely.
Oh, it's awful.
It is awful. And I could see it. It was very clear in hypnotherapy practice that all the kids, and I'm talking up to about the age of 15 or 16, some it was a little older. I mean, it was 100% success, whatever I did with them, whether it was attention span, learning, a lot of them would come, especially the older students, because they had test anxiety and things like that. And up till like 16, 18, and then you start to get all the, well, I don't know if I believe that, and I don't know, you know, this kind of thing going on.
Yeah, the doubting starts.
Yes, it does. And you need that too. Right. You know, you really do have to have that, but it's more difficult working with older people than it is with the youngsters.
And once upon a time, I used to teach yoga, and I remember I had a little shop. And these high school kids, they were probably like 15, 16, were walking by, and they decided to come in. It's something fun to do. So, and they were so receptive. And at first they told me, is that really going to feel good? Is that really going to help? I said, yeah, it will. Just let me help you. And it's amazing. They just were so open-minded. Fell right into it. And it was, you know, much easier working with them than it was my adult students.
See, that's exactly what I was saying. You know firsthand. It's true.
Right.
It's true. Give me a kid. Mm-hmm. Actually, I loved working with the age groups of like 10 through 16, 17. Yeah. Loved it. Give me one of those and any day.
Exactly. I agree with you. Now, speaking of challenges, what do you see as challenges in relation to spiritualism and metaphysical related spiritual practices becoming part of what is often called the mainstream society? I mean, you talked about meditations and the imagination circle. One of the challenges could be just linguistics as one of them. But what other challenges?
You know, I see it the same as it's always been, Candace. Mm-hmm. People are reluctant to change. Mm-hmm. They're reluctant to open their awareness to other methods or means of learning to live in life. Mm-hmm. You know, we as a society have placed all of our efforts in teaching kids and, you know, how to use their left brain, very logical, you know, mathematics is a logical thing, sciences and history, and this is all left brain stuff. Right. And until we start, that's my feelings, until we start having people, children, start at a young age, understand that their right brain is just as important as their left brain. Mm-hmm. And to think more openly, think outside of the box. Heaven forbid we think outside of the box.
I know, huh?
Right? I mean, oh my, the sky's going to fall on us
if
we do that. And until we can develop this attitude that the right brain has as great a function, even honestly, to me, a greater function than the left brain, we're not, the challenges will continue to be what they are and have always been. I have a friend, my niece actually in South Carolina, talked to me and she said, do you know anything about empaths? And if you do you know enough to talk to someone about it? I said, oh, for heaven's sake. I said, of course I know about empaths. And, you know, she should know me well enough.
Right.
To know, right? and so it's her partner. And he's very scientific. He's a designer. Of all things, he designs weapons for a company. Yep. But here's the thing. Now, he's 40 years old, and he's apparently very empathic, and this is disturbing to him.
Oh, it is.
Yes, it's very disturbing because it doesn't fit in the scientific mold.
Right.
It's feelings, you know, it's not logic. And so it's all about feelings and the intuition. And she said it's very disconcerting to him. And so I said, you know what, Cindy? He needs to start applying his science, what he looks at as science, to the to intuition. Mm-hmm. Look at it from a scientific standpoint. I said, here's the thing. We're all walking antennas. It's all energy. Everything is energy. Mm-hmm. And if you are aware of that, if you can understand that, then you can understand why there are empaths.
Right.
Because we're picking up on each other's energy field constantly, all day long, if we're within somebody else's, you know, energy field.
That's true.
And I said, if he just would apply the logic of his own science to this realization, he would understand it and not be afraid of it, not be find it very disconcerting. And so she said, I didn't hear any more from her because I thought I'd get a call from him that he'd want to discuss it. So I didn't hear from her. So I talked to her. I said, was he receptive at all about what I said? She said, yeah, but he has to think about it a while and he doesn't want to tell anybody.
Oh, so he's afraid and embarrassed of what other people are going to think about him.
Absolutely. And this is common.
Such a common theme.
Oh, it's very common.
I mean, and it's you know, because of the stereotype, maybe, if for lack of a better word, that goes with being an empath or having psychic abilities or being a medium, any of that in the mainstream society, it's looked at as, oh goodness, that person's crazy. They are hearing voices, all of this, and they're a witch, all these things. It makes the society comes and says those things, makes it look bad. And then we have people who have these wonderful gifts, who are afraid to talk about them and don't know where to go. And then they think they're going crazy. And things like that.
That's exactly right. And isn't that sad? Imagine the level of healers we might have out there if they would just be willing and open to discuss it. Mm-hmm. If they felt safe enough to discuss it. And people don't feel safe. Like I said, when I was in Maryland and West Virginia, it was a metaphysical wasteland. There was no way I could open a conversation to anyone about any of this.
Mm-hmm. So tragic.
It is tragic.
A lot of people could have benefited from it.
Yes, yes. And this is this man. I don't know what are his capabilities. They may be vast.
Right.
And here they are, neglected.
Right.
When right now on this planet, we need every healer, every psychic, and every medium to be aligned with the light and to help each other.
Right.
So it's kind of sad, but yes, I see the challenges the same today as they were 35 years ago for me.
Yeah, and we believe you're right. There's still that fear. There's still that fear. There's still that negative feeling that's associated with anything in the metaphysical world. In a quick example, I knew a woman who was taking a yoga class, not my yoga class, but she was taking a yoga class. And she had told me that she was afraid of the ending part, the ending part of the yoga where they have you relax and breathe and all that. Mm-hmm. And she said she was afraid of it because she was afraid that her mind would not, she wouldn't be able to control her mind. She was afraid of, what did she say, summoning evil. And I said, oh my, are you, I don't believe that that's going to happen during that part. It's not meant for that. But she was afraid of the last part, so she would not participate in the meditation part at the end because she was afraid.
That's common. It is so common. I had people, this is the truth, and this still boggles my mind. I would have clients as a hypnotherapist that would come in and say, no one can know I'm here. and especially my pastors of my church, oh my, because they think this is working through the devil.
Mm-hmm. I've heard so many times. Oh my goodness.
It's so crazy to me. I'm like, why is this? Well, we know if you look at the history, you know, right? I was in I used to do a lot of talks for the Rotary Clubs and the Lions Clubs and things like that as a hypnotherapist. And in one of them, I'll never forget it. It was a breakfast talk, which I'm not a morning person. And I had to be at this breakfast at 7 o'clock. And I thought, oh, great. That would be great. I got to think this early in the morning. This should be really fun. So I had my breakfast and I stood up there and I started to talk, and I had a man raise his hand in the crowd, and he said, well, what about, he said, the Bible says that this work is the devil's work. And I said, you know, sir, this is not the place or the time to have this discussion. I'm here to talk about hypnotherapy and how it's an adjunct to medicine and psychotherapy and things, I said, in a very positive way. I said, so if you want to have that discussion, I'd be glad to have it with you, but I'm not going to have it here and now. I have all of 10 minutes to actually give this talk, right? And that's about all day. 10, 15 minutes is what most of these places allow you. And so he said, yes, but, and he kept trying to do this. He wanted to make a point. And I said, I'm sorry, sir, I'm not going to talk to you about that. And this went on three different times. And finally, he got up and left the room.
Yeah.
And after the talk was over, one of the people came and they said, you handled him so well. Wow. He does this kind of stuff all the time.
Wow.
And they were very, she said, I'm very proud of how you handled it. And I said, well, I said, this early in the morning, I'm surprised I did. should have looked at him through zombie eyes or something, you know? Like, I don't know. Yep. What are you talking about? But yes, this is a very common thing.
Yes.
This fear of the devil, mm-hmm. which to me doesn't even exist. You have mm-hmm. positive and negative, and they, you know, and everything, but I don't have this thing about devils. Mm-hmm. And, never have, even in my young life, I never understood that devil concept.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's out there and it will remain out there until more, you know, we have to come to a tipping point. We have to have at least 50% of the people, 51%, mm-hmm. Being willing to look at without fear or even with fear, still being willing and open to look at possibilities. And once that happens, then we will see a fast movement towards, you know, but you have to get that 51% first.
And people have to be willing, you know, to open their minds.
Yep.
Be willing to learn, basically, to learn.
Yes, and not be afraid. And you know what's happening, which is good, you know, all these mediums and things on television now mm-hmm. is actually a very good thing.
Yes, I agree.
Because people are less afraid to say, well, you know, maybe, you know, if you see it on television, it must be true, right? So anyway, they said, well, if you know, they're not afraid to talk about it, maybe I shouldn't be afraid to talk about it.
Even those paranormal ghost hunting shows have made people talk as well. There's paranormal podcasts all over the place now, even with that. So
absolutely. And so it's amazing how many people are saying, well, you know, I didn't want to ever say anything about this, but I lived in a haunted house.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's so true. It is so true.
Yeah. So that's, you know, but yeah, that this is the stuff that will go on and on until, like I say, we miss that, get to that 51% tipping level. And then I think we'll see changes, but I don't know when that'll be. I don't have that kind of a crystal ball.
No.
Yeah. Nobody does. It's a time thing, and you have to be patient, but always stand your ground and keep working towards that end, right? Yeah,
keep doing the good work, you know?
Yes.
That's all we can ask. Now, do you have any, I know you're doing so many things, but do you have any upcoming projects, publications, workshops, classes, or anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, that's the one question that puzzles me, because I'm doing things, I do things locally now. I don't do things, I don't even have really a website, I have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And so I am doing something, I'm teaching some classes in September, but they're going to be in Aetna, Maine. Mm-hmm. Hypnotherapy certification classes. I've got some people coming from Scotland and England and Australia. To coming up to Maine to do the certification classes. And that's the biggest thing I have going on. I don't, you know, people find me now, Candace, through word of mouth. And I, people, you know, my teaching really extends all over the world now. And I teach online through the university and then locally. And if people want, you know, to learn, they find me. Somehow they find me. But so the best thing to do, I guess, if you want to know more about me, is go on the Facebook page or go onto the IMU website. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I have been told lately, I've had some messages from Spirit that I really should get my website up again. I took it down a few years ago because I guess I just needed a break.
Right.
Mm. But now I'm getting some messages from Spirit that it's time to put myself back up on the on the web again, which again, I'm resisting, right? I'm resisting. Out there. Yeah, I'm resisting it. I do that a lot. I resist things a lot. I had a friend. I don't know. I'm looking at the time here. I was a friend with a Lakota, the Lakota Nation, Lakota Sioux Nation staff carrier, Chief White Eagle, and he passed away a couple of weekends ago. A friend of mine, and I used to take counsel with him over the phone, never met him in person, but a friend of mine who did know him very well introduced us. There were five of us women, and he called us the Sisters of Light. Mm-hmm. And he would call, we'd talk on the phone, and he always knew when I was having a rough patch, and he would say, Sister, he'd call up and he'd say, Sister, you're having a time, aren't you? And I'd say, how do you always know? But he's, you know, he's spiritual. He's a staff carrier for the Lakota Sioux Nation, for heaven's sake. And, you know, and so anyway, he passed away. And my friend in West Virginia, who introduced us, wants to have an honoring ceremony. And she has been receiving messages from him that he wants me to be there because there's spiritual work to be done, some big medicine work that needs to be done during the circle. And I've been resisting it. It's in April. And I kept saying, I don't want to go. I wanted to go down to Maryland and West Virginia, and my family's still there, in June or July. So I resisted going until he came to me, Chief White Eagle, and he wouldn't leave. He just would not.
You had to stop resisting.
I stopped resisting, and I said, all right. Well, when Jan, my friend Jan, and I got the same exact messages, basically.
Wow.
At the same time.
Wow.
And I'm not kidding, because I emailed her and I said, I don't know why, I need to talk to you about something. And she's texting me at the same time.
Oh my goodness.
About the same thing. We knew we were both connecting to him at the same time. So I said, okay, I get it. I'm going. So I'm going in April to Maryland to take part in this very spiritual honoring ceremony for Chief White Eagle. And this is how I live my life now, basically. I don't plan far out as a rule. This thing in September is probably as far as I've planned out for a long time. I try to live in the moment and feel where I'm being guided and directed to. So that's all I can really say about projects and things of that sort.
Listen, do you have a chart? What's your Facebook page? Is it the church Facebook page, the Healing Light?
No, it's the Hypnotherapy Services Facebook page.
Okay.
It's Hypnotic Therapeutic Services on Facebook.
Okay.
And, you know, you can find it by plugging my name in or plugging in Hypnotherapy Services, and you'll find me there.
By the way, D-E-C-K-E-R.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good.
Hypnotherapy Services. So that's how you'll find me for now, until I stop resisting.
Yes, stop resisting. And you also have a church website. Is that active, right?
Yes, it is. It's very active. It's the website is healinglightspiritualistchurch.org.
Okay.
And people, if they're interested in the ordination program, they can find it there under classes. So healinglightspiritualistchurch.org. And that's ongoing. People can take the ordination course anytime.
Right.
You know, it's not like you wait for a specific semester to do it, you know.
And one more website. We have the International Metaphysical University website to find classes?
Yeah, it's intermetu.com, intermetu.com.
Very good. Well, Janet, as always, it's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you, Candace.
And
it's been a pleasure to be here.
It's fantastic. What a fantastic interview we've had today. I thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome, my dear. Have a great week.
You too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. As always, you can visit awakenedpathonline.com. Again, that's awakenedpathonline.com for show updates, courses, workshops, events, resources, and more. Don't hesitate also to contact me on that website. You can hit the contact button and send me a message. I'm always glad to receive comments and feedback. I'm Reverend Candace Nadine Breen, and thank you again for listening to Awakened Path Radio. Namaste, and blessed be.